Welcome to our third episode of Mental Health 360 on VBS radio station number one. We are absolutely taking your calls today. The call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. So if you'd like to come in, call in and speak to either myself or to our guest, Don Goey from the DeMello Center in San Francisco, I believe. Is that correct, Don?
The headquarters is in New York, but the administrative offices are out here in San Francisco.
Yeah, okay. We're going to be speaking to Don Goey today and from the DeMello Center. And he and I actually are going to be coordinating thoughts about the philosophy of DeMello's work, who I believe tragically passed very early. And you'll be able to tell us about that, Don. What was that, around 1987 was that?
Yes.
So DeMello passed in 1987, tragically, unfortunately, untimely young death. And I know that you have taken over as the director of the center as of 2018. Okay, good. So Don will be telling us a lot about the DeMello Center and about the philosophy of DeMello, who I believe, was he a Jesuit priest?
Right. Yeah, he was. He was also trained as a psychotherapist at the University of Chicago back when Carl Rogers was there. So he had two hats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had the pleasure actually of interviewing Carl Rogers for my dissertation.
Oh.
I was so lucky. Yeah, very fortunate. Such a really brilliant man also.
Yes. Changed psychology.
Excuse me?
Carl Rogers changed psychology.
He did. I just read an article that he is considered like the father of psychology after he is the father of CBT. Yeah. And all the influences that he's had.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So anyone who would like to call in today, I am Dr. Susan Lindner. And this is BBS Station 1. I've been getting some emails that I am not giving enough information, either in terms of how someone can call in. So that number is 1-888-627-6008. If anyone wants to find out more about me, they can look at my website, which is www.keepinglifereal.com. And so I introduced you, Don Goey, as the director for the DeMello Center. And why don't you just give us a nice introduction about what the center is and why it's relevant to Mental Health 360, which is my show, and maybe we can converge ideas and perceptions and frameworks down, you know, into the show a little bit further.
Well, the DeMello Spirituality Center is the archive of all of Anthony DeMello's work. He did a number of videos, a number of audio files that we've turned into podcasts, and of course all of his writings. He wrote 13 books. Mm-hmm. all of that are published in English by Random House. And so our mission is to keep putting Tony's work out there in the world. And even though he died in 1987, his books continue to be bestsellers, and his work continues to influence some of our very important spiritual thinkers like Eckhart Tolle or Ajahn Sethi, Thomas More.
Yes.
And the way in which I guess it would dovetail into what you were talking about, Psychology 360, is the central focus is on how unhappy most people are. You know, it's hard to find a completely happy person.
Mm-hmm.
You do the math from the research, it's only about 4% of the population that say that they're completely happy. And the irony of it is that we were born happy. We were born free, but we've become trapped in limited thinking. You know, we were born with an open heart.
Yeah.
That for so many people, stress and fear so easily close.
Yes.
We were born gifted with we're beings of immeasurable worth, but so often people feel they're not good enough. They're trapped in shame. And, you know, within all of that, there's this wonderful divinity of joy that's within us, that's around us, that's there to make life meaningful and beautiful and rich, but we become blocked from seeing it. Anthony Nomello, he said, it's as if we all been hypnotized to see what's not there and not see what is there. And so what the center's about is bringing his work forward, his message forward, to help us to wake up. You know, we're trying to be the snap of the finger that busts into that hypnotic state that we're living from.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. I see you have a little poster board of the book, Stop Fixing Yourself. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. By Anthony DeMello. And I am hopefully finishing some edits on a book that I have coming out in November of this year, 2021. And I called the book, it's trademarked already, and I have like it patented, the name. It's called Reset Your Soul. Mm. And in this book, in chapter one, I actually address, in using a little bit, the language is a little bit different, but basically saying how we're born into this world and we are truly perfection. We are perfect. And then what happens is our well-intentioned, hopefully, caregivers and parents and people who take care of us, they, unbeknownst to them, if the awareness is not there, they start to introject some of their own stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
And it starts to very slowly tarnish away and chip away at our beingness, our wholeness, and our perfection. Yeah. And by the time we get to this place where you and I are having a conversation, patients, clients, they often say, like, how did I get to this place? And they do come in. They feel less than. They have a compromised self-esteem, poor self-confidence, an impaired self-image. And that work in terms of discharging it in order to have that renewal, that sense of renewal, or a homecoming back to self with all of those negative introjects, like letting it all go. That's tremendous hard work.
Well, you know, DeMello, he said that the question he got asked most by people when he was out on the workshop and speaking circuit was, what do I need to do to change myself? And his answer was, I have a big surprise for you. He said, you don't have to do anything. In fact, the more you do, the worse you make it. And it is, as you were talking about, you know, how is it that we're born happy and we have so many people unhappy? And the answer is that you're right. It's the way we've been socialized. Society programs it out of us, happiness right out of us. It stamps into us the belief that happiness and self-worth are found out there in the world. And if we work long and hard, success will come. And out of that success, happiness and fulfillment will follow. And then there's a whole profession that you and I are in that are there to catch people, you know, that we've all swallowed that formula. You know, and 10, 20 years later down the line, people come to the realization that success has come, but without fulfillment.
Yeah.
And they have this sense that they're failing at life. They're failing at living, and they are. And so waking up is the realization that contrary to what society has taught us, nothing, but absolutely nothing of the world can make us happy. Success, of course, is important, but success is not the same as fulfillment. Fulfillment does not come from the world. Happiness doesn't come from the world. Mm-hmm. Not that radiant happiness of a child that's constant, that makes you smile for no reason. Happiness comes from within you. And the truth is There's not a single moment in our life when we don't have everything we need to be happy. And the only reason we're ever unhappy is because we're focusing on what we don't have rather than what we have right here, right now.
You hit the nail on the head. That's exactly it. It's like this perpetual rumination of, oh, I should be doing this, or I don't have this, or, you know, if I had done this, would have, could have, should have, would have, would have, could have, should have. So a tremendous amount of focus on the past and what didn't happen, and then on, you know, the present of what is not present, rather than saying, okay, let me focus on what are my strengths, what are my capacities, what competencies do I present with, right? And focusing from a strength-based perspective, like what, you know, how are you surviving? You know, we're all surviving. So let's take the strengths and then let's build on it from there.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so, you know, the whole idea of DeMello's to say, to stop fixing yourself, it means you're not broken. You're not some problem to be solved. You're okay. Right. And if there's a problem, it's the way you were programmed to believe that without this thing or this person or this result, you cannot be happy. It's a false belief. You don't acquire or earn happiness or peace or self-worth. You have it already. You drop the false belief and the struggle with the world drops, and peace arises all by itself. Happiness arises all by itself. Mm-hmm. All is well, because you are, even if things remain a mess, all is well when you are. And the belief that happiness is waiting for us in the future keeps us out of the present moment. And in this moment, there's always the freedom to be at peace. And in that stillness, the joy within us comes alive, dissolving mm-hmm. the stress and negativity we're holding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've all felt those wondrous moments. They come and go. So stop fixing yourself. And DeMello in general is about that joy coming and staying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it comes and it stays because it is who you are. It is what you are. And you've been, you know, you begin to understand, particularly as you step into this process of awareness that makes you realize the level of programming that's undermining your happiness, that you've been programmed to upset yourself. You know, when life doesn't go the way our programming demands it should in terms of how the world should be, who we should be, what we should want. You know, we get upset, and you free yourself from that oppressive fear of failing through mm-hmm. awareness. You step back from the distress, but at the same time, let yourself feel the upset without fixing it. 100%. Understand that the stress is happening in you, not to you, mm-hmm. that it's in you, not in reality. Reality is basically neutral, but equally that you are not you're upset. You begin to see that you're not this stress. You're not this anxiety. You're not this depression. They are moments that are happening with you, within you. And if you don't identify with them, they dissipate. And as you observe the distress, it will mm-hmm. pass, freeing you to be at peace, freeing you for happiness. Everything in this on this planet passes, especially emotions. They
especially
come and go.
Emotions. Yeah, I say that to my patients all the time. If you're feeling miserable, okay, you know what? Be miserable. Like, sit with it. It's okay. Because it's a feeling. It's a feeling, and it will pass. Yeah?
So, exactly right. That's how you deprogram. It's called awareness.
And you know, it's interesting because what you're actually sharing is you are really building upon DeMello's work was built upon Carl Rogers' work, and really using more just for the moment, deviating to more of a psychological vocabulary. We're using what you're really referring to is reframing and redirecting cognitive distortions, a cognitive mindset. Perceptions that are sort of set negatively in a framework that doesn't really support or propel one's growth and awareness and capacity for real and meaningful, not only change, but for real meaningful sense of purpose and life, a value in life. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, Carl Rogers was very clear that the importance of being in touch with your feelings.
Yes.
And you know, for so many of us, if the feelings that we're having are negative, or if they're upsetting feelings, you know, if they're upsets, we want to get rid of them. We want to push them away.
Yeah.
And yet it's through bringing them into awareness, literally embracing them instead of resisting them, that you get deprogrammed from all of that junk that society put into your head. It's through awareness. You know, what the another famous quote of DeMello's is, what you're aware of, you control. And what you're unaware of controls you. And so again, it's enough for you simply to be watchful and aware. And through that, to allow yourself to begin to see the neurosis that's playing itself out in you.
Yes.
And through that, all that is neurotic within you will begin to drop, and you'll begin to wake up. You know, Ram Dass talks about, you begin to discover that all the things that you thought were bad in life were really your friends tapping you on the shoulder, trying to get you to wake up from the delusional system you're functioning from, you know. And so awareness allows you to see and feel what's going on inside you that sabotages your happiness and your peace. The negativity, the upsets, the pessimism, the aggression and competitiveness, you know, the shame, the worthlessness. And as you make an unconscious pattern conscious, it dissolves. I mean, that's what psychotherapy is all about.
Correct.
Dissolving those unconscious patterns. They're running our lives. And awareness is the way in which you dissolve.
Let me piggyback on what you're just saying, to make sort of bring it to a point for maybe somebody who's listening who is not as psychologically minded, as this conversation may be going. So there are times, for example, I'll say to my patient, you have complete autonomy and you have complete power over your actions and your behaviors and your competencies. I tell my patients, you're not connected to an IV drip. You're not connected to a dialysis machine to survive 3 times a week. You don't have a tree. You can feed yourself. God willing, you can walk. And, you know, I think many of my clients that walk in the door, they take for granted these gifts that we have called life. So let me just give an alternate way of looking at this, or actually I'm going to ask you your opinion on this. Have you ever worked with a client who has cancer or who has been diagnosed with something, and then they're sharing with you that they never felt more liberated, that it really like set them free? It really put into order really what's important. Yeah?
Yes. Yes, I worked with people who were challenged with life-threatening illness back. Also worked back in the day during the AIDS epidemic when it was at its height out here in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, people, there's something about being at the bottom of your barrel. There's something about when there is something that happens to you that you cannot change, that then motivates you, opens you, inspires you to change yourself.
That's right. That's what I would like to know. What is that?
First thing you need to do, as I said, is to get in touch with the negative feelings. Don't push them away. Don't try to turn them into something else. They need to be understood for you to be liberated from them. So the first thing, get in touch with those negative feelings that you're usually not aware of, that you tend to push away or repress. And as I said, you know, it's that anxiety, that stress, that nervous tension, that sense of gloom or doom, all of that kind of thing. Get in touch with those feelings first. Observe the thoughts you are thinking that produce the upset. You know, we think our way into really tight corners that create, an intense emotional reaction in us that then creates a perception of the world, through our attitude, in which everything we see witnesses to the upset, to the negativity that our mind is in. And yet it's not out there, it's in us. So observe those thoughts you're thinking that does that, and step back from it. Tell yourself, and this is a very important part of the steps, tell yourself, this is happening in me, not necessarily in reality. Mm-hmm. And begin to see the truth of that as much as you can, and allow yourself to feel whatever it is that you're feeling to the full intensity of it, and remind and don't judge yourself for being that afraid. Don't judge yourself for feeling that ashamed or self-condemning of yourself. Don't go there. Or if you go there, just observe that from that position of stepping back. That's what Zen Buddhism calls it. They call it step back. And then what will happen, invariably, what will happen is that the emotional upset will pass. And you might not even notice it when it passes.
Yes.
And as it passes, when you eventually will, but at the moment it passes, you might not notice. And then, you know, a few moments later, you'll be saying, oh, I'm not in that horrible place anymore.
That's true.
You're asking about a life-threatening illness. I had one. And I was diagnosed with a brain tumor. And I was out of work. I had a wife and four children. And they told me with this brain tumor that that to expect the worst, that the collateral damage from the surgery could leave me unable to ever work again. And I would wake up. And so with the surgery, they weren't going to do the surgery for 6 weeks. So I had 6 weeks of not having to think about somebody drilling a hole in my head. But I really underestimated how fearful I was in my life at that time. I really underestimated how much that was going to turn into rumination. And I would wake up every night for the first 2 weeks at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'd stare out the window until the cold, dark night, and convinced that my life was doomed. And along with it, my wife and my kids. And I felt incredible shame. I felt like I'd failed. I failed my family. I failed myself. And then after 2 weeks of this horror, self-imposed horror, I finally asked myself, or perhaps the universe came in sideways and put the question to me, it's what was worse, what might happen to me in the future, or the abject fear that I was in right then and in that moment and had been consuming every moment for 2 weeks. And it was clear to me, the fear, the abject fear was worse. And so I began to practice this approach, which I actually learned from Carl Rogers. And it has to do with just allowing myself to feel what I was feeling, the terror that I was feeling. And as I did that, to my horror, it got worse. I was holding it down and it just swelled up like a lion roaring, you know. I was at the point of no return. I just had to ride it out like a surfer rides a big wave. And I came into shore. And I was suddenly all was quiet and calm. And then my mind started kicking up the dust again, started coming up with negative thoughts, gloom and doom thoughts. The terror came back. I processed it in the same way. I did that 4 or 5 times. And at the end of an hour, I had gotten clear of it. I'd gotten clear of that fear. It dropped. And I made up my mind right that, and I knew it dropped because the next time, you know, I looked out that window that was the cold, dark night of oblivion.
Yes.
What I saw when I looked out was a beautiful shimmer of moonlight on the oak tree in our front yard.
It spoke to you.
It spoke to me. And I made up my mind right then and there that I was going to let go of fear whenever it raised its head, which it did several times over the next 4 weeks before surgery. But I processed letting go of fear by using this awareness process. And the surgery was a complete success. And, you know, if neuroscience knew back in the 80s,
yes,
in the late 80s, what they know now, they would have, what they know through neuroplasticity and the new neuroscience, they would have told me that my shift in attitude, my shift in perspective,
was what healed you.
That's what produced the mind-body connection that produced that result. And more than that, it changed my life. And so suddenly, you know, I was understanding what all the mystics say is what you consider to be a curse may turn out to be your greatest blessing, because this changed my life. I wouldn't be doing on this call with you tonight if that hadn't happened to me. It changed my life. I was at Stanford University at the time in the Department of Psychiatry. Mm-hmm. And I left and I went to do the work with a guy named Gerald Jampolsky, bringing spirituality and psychology together. And now neuroscience has joined, or, you know, they're all seeing the same thing in terms of how a human being liberates themselves from the chronic suffering, the mental suffering that they've been enduring for a long time.
You know, you have just touched upon like so many things that are, I consider so exciting actually, and so valuable for anyone who doesn't really understand the impact of neuroscience and neuroplasticity in the brain and the relationship between the mind and the body. And just to simplify it for our listeners is there are times, and I'm sure you've done this also, where I'll say to somebody, this is backtracking just a little bit on what you're saying in terms of not reacting to how you're feeling. I'll ask my patient, I'll say, well, where are you experiencing this feeling? And lots of times a patient will be feeling it like something stuck in their throat, yeah, or in their stomach, or their legs feel very heavy and grounded. And we go to that place and we focus in on that body part that is actually speaking to us. Like, how many times have you been with a patient and they're tapping their legs like this? And I feel like, I say to them, your foot is speaking to me. So why don't you let speak for the foot and tell me what that foot is saying? Yeah?
Yeah.
So I have used, as a Gestalt therapist, I have used the body, and having trained and worked just for a short time when I was in San Diego with the Pearls, we were using the body to help someone understand the feeling and understand the affect, and then not to react to it, to acknowledge it, but don't react to it. You can acknowledge it. You can sit with it. You don't have to like it, but you don't have to react to it. Mm. And just know it's there. And it too, like you said before, it will pass. It's a feeling. Feeling right. Pass. Now, yeah. There are times, though, there are, you know, a lot of our patients, they really need strategies. They'll say, okay, you know what, it's easier said than done. No, I agree to that. And I often say to all of my clients, get out of these four walls where you are. Just get out. Because once you put yourself out in the world, first of all, just seeing anything, the external stimuli, even though it's not related to anything how you're feeling, the external stimuli is going to trigger the neuroreceptors. So there'll be like a little bit of it, some interest, something will click and will just give a little bit of a different direction off those ruminations. Yeah?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So right. those are more strategies. What were you just going to say? Because I wanted to say one other thing, but I want to.
I think that approach about working with the body is a really good one. You know, whatever makes a person feel safe enough to bring their attention to what's going on within them. And so the strategy that DeMello gives us is the first thing, as I've been saying, is you need to do is to get in touch with those negative feelings, allow them to come up. The second, acknowledge that negative feeling is in you, not necessarily reality. And the third is not to identify with a negative feeling and not to judge it. You know, one of the things that DeMello talks about in terms of not identifying with a negative feeling is that we say, I am depressed. I am fearful. You know, I am angry. Right. And, you know, what we do know in neuroscience is that your brain takes that information literally.
Yes.
And the truth of the matter is you're not depressed. That's not who you are. What you're having it in an experience at the moment of depression, you know, so what DeMello asks you to do is shift it. Say to yourself, depression is there right now, or fear is there right now, or my experience right now is a fearful one, you know, or my experience right now is one of shame. Don't identify it, and just get that, do that little step of clearing it up by not saying, I am depressed, I am fearful.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and he says that as you do that, you know, you're defining yourself in terms of a feeling, and that's your illusion, that's your mistake. In no way is that feeling affecting your essential self. It's like when you throw black paint in the air, the air remains uncontaminated. You know, the paint comes down, gets on the ground, but it doesn't contaminate the air. You never color the air black. So no matter what happens to you, what DeMello is saying, you remain uncontaminated. Your basic nature remains intact. There's a depression there right now. There's a worry there right now. Let it be. Leave it alone. It'll pass. Like you said, you don't have to react to it. Everything passes, especially emotions.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and also there's one word that I usually make a change when somebody will say, I am depressed. And I'll say, well, no, you're not depressed. You feel depressed. It's a very, you know, characterologically, it's just a very big shift. Just that
it's
one
word. It's an important shift. And, you know, everything boils down to, how do you identify? What do you identify yourself as? What? Do you identify yourself as the confusion and commotion that's going on in your head?
Right.
And, you know, one of the things that you find with awareness is that awareness takes you into it.
Yes.
And you can make some wonderful discoveries by not resisting what your upset or your negative emotions carry. I had this experience a few years ago of, I was just walking down the hallway at the office, and I had this, and it was a great day. Everything had been going well. And I had this background feeling something was wrong.
Yeah.
And then behind it, quickly came behind it, was I was to blame for it, whatever it was, and I was going to be punished for it. And that's my distillation of it. It was a lot of talk going on. It was very upsetting. And since I was using this awareness process, I stopped. I let the feeling come in. It was a deep feeling of dread. And the more I hung out with it, I watched how it turned into this deep feeling of sadness that then turned into this deep feeling of abandonment. And I realized that I had been, that reaction I was having had been going on in my head ever since I was like 9 years old. And it was still with me and had been put in there by a very cruel and abusive stepfather. And it turned into a belief system that I carried and that I suffered under. And as I came to that realization, saw my stepfather's face and connected the dots, or I think my brain did the dot connecting.
Yes.
I felt a feeling of relief, a feeling of freedom. And now it's not like it's gone away, but now when it comes up, it's not this dark unconscious thing that sneaks up behind me and smacks me in the back of the head. I invite it in the front door. Come in.
Correct.
You know?
Yes.
And let's just sit with each other until I get free of it. And that's because what I'm talking about.
That shame, that overbearing sense of shame that sort of just creeped in. Yeah. It just brings you right back down to like when you were nine.
Right.
And unless you're aware of it, it can really bring you down. But once you are aware of it, then you can say, okay, here we go again. Shame is creeping back. Something triggered it. I don't know what it is. It doesn't matter, but it's here. And I'm just not going to react to it. It's old stuff, right? It can stay. It's there. I'm not pushing it away, but I know that it's going to pass. And I'm going to still focus on, like you were saying, you were having really a pretty awesome good day prior to this click.
Yeah, there was nothing real that was causing it. And so what it allows you to do, the awareness, it allows you to take a look at the way you've been put together, you know, by your parents, by schools, by religions, by the whole socialization process we've all gone through, and the way it makes you function. And as you look at the way you've been put together and the way you function, you begin to find that inside your brain, there's this whole program stamped into it, that wired into your brain, a set of demands about how the world should be, how you should be, what you should want. And it's constantly insisting that its demands be met by life, you know, by people in your life, by you. And, you know, if those demands are met, your brain allows you to feel some elation or self-satisfaction. But, you know, the research shows it's very short-lived. It's not very long before you're looking, but well, if something's going well, but what's waiting for me around the corner, like me with my dreaded for my stepfather. So but in short, you know, if you've been trained, you've basically been trained to upset yourself. You know, when other people don't live up to what your brain's expectations are, it torments you with frustration and anger and bitterness. You know, when things are not under your control, which is, you know, way more than half the time, or if the future looks uncertain, your brain insists that you experience anxiety or tension or worry. Then you expend a ton of energy coping with these negative emotions by expending even more energy trying to rearrange the world around you so that the demands of your brain will be met. And again, if that happens, you'll be granted a measure of precarious peace, but it's precarious because at any moment, some trifle, like you spill ketchup on your tie or your blouse, or somebody doesn't return an email, or you don't like the email they returned, you know, something will come up and will upset you because you're living in this trap that, you know, this social program that you're trapped in.
Well, let me, first of all, I am in complete alignment with you, is that when something like this comes up and you're triggered, welcome it, acknowledge it and welcome it, because it often is actually, it opens the passage, it opens the door to something that we already know. This is usually all old stuff. It's not usually new stuff. So it opens the door and it allows us to say, oh, here it is again, but we don't have to react to it. We're just acknowledging it. And through the acknowledgement of it, as you're sharing, I do believe, if I'm hearing you correctly, is that you can actually learn from it.
Absolutely, you can learn from it. You know, the things you can learn sometimes are really simple. Waking up, it's talked a lot about in spiritual terms, is waking up to enlightenment and that kind of thing. Waking up is as simple as you're looking at something differently and you realize for a long time you've had that wrong and you're willing to change. That's a wake up. You get started with this very simple practice of awareness that I'm talking about, that DeMello has laid out here, that as you said earlier, you know, it's been supported by some of the great minds in psychology and spirituality forever.
His work is very well.
Get started and you're going to quickly see the results, you know, in a few weeks, in 2 weeks, if you really do it, and you're going to see the quality of your life change. You're going to be walking down the street and you're going to know, you're going to have this sense of like, I'm different. And it's a difference I really welcome. You respond to life differently. You're more alive. Your eyes reopen to the truth that people everywhere are searching for, namely that fountainhead of peace and joy that hides in every human heart. That's what you're releasing. You know, one night, in another one of those middle of the night, I do a lot of spiritual work in the middle of the night. And in the middle of the night, I woke up. I was anxious. I had this kind of non-specific anxiety running that a lot of people had. And I went through the awareness process, you know, welcomed it in, open to getting in touch with those feelings, identified it as this is happening in me, not necessarily have anything to do with reality. Didn't judge myself for it, didn't try to change anything and to turn it into something more positive, just was with it, and then waited for it to pass. And when it passed, it left me in this wonderful, quiet, silent place. And I had this marvelous experience of looking back from this quiet place. I'd step back into this peace and quiet inside of myself. And as I looked at all of the emotions that I was having just a few minutes before that were so upsetting, all the thoughts that I was, the negative thoughts that were going on in me that were generating that upset, it was absolutely clear to me, as clear as the nose on my face, they had nothing to do with me. It was just a mass of reactivity that I was identifying with. And through this process of awareness, the identity with it dropped and left me. And then, you know, this feeling of happiness, of peace, of serenity arises all by itself. It wasn't like I made the choice to be at peace. Peace just arose.
Peace just arose from you.
Yeah.
So I want to expand upon that just a little bit. We have a little bit more time. And actually, you know what, Don, if anyone wants to contact you or has some questions, maybe you could just at this juncture, and we'll do it one more time at the end of the show, maybe you could just share some contact information about how someone can get in touch with you or if they have a question based on what you're sharing.
Sure. They can contact me through the website. It's the demellocenter.com. And it's a great website. It's full of tools. It has blogs, short little blogs. It has short little podcasts, all given by Anthony DeMello. It's a wonderful website. You can really dive in. Cool. And you can find me there.
That's great. How do you like your work as the director of the center?
Oh, I love it. I work with great people. And they are people who really care about alleviating the suffering in the world in any way that they can. And so, and they're happy people. They're fun people. We laugh a lot.
Yeah.
Work hard.
What were you doing when you were in Stanford?
I was an executive in the medical school. And so I first was the chief operating officer of the Department of Medicine and then later the Department of Psychiatry.
Yeah. Did you like the work or?
No, no, I left it. Everybody thought I was crazy. You know, it was a plum job and, but my heart was somewhere else. And I'd come across the work of Jerry Jampolsky. He wrote the book, Love is Letting Go of Fear. And he established the Center for Attitudinal Healing. And the center was doing the groundbreaking work in a psychological approach to catastrophic life events. So we were working with death and dying. We were working with parents who'd lost children, prisoners in jail. Clinton administration even sent us into Croatia and Bosnia during that genocidal war to work with
really? People.
And from those people, you know, it goes back to that question you asked, that had I ever found that people who facing these dire circumstances actually find something precious that make it all worth it. I can't tell you how many times I heard somebody say, if I had to go back and give up the spiritual growth that I've gained as a result of this big issue that I had to come face to face with, I wouldn't. I wouldn't give it up. I've come alive. You know, it's really funny that I had to come to face death to come fully alive and realize that before there was a part of me that was really quite dead.
That's correct. Yes. Yes.
Existing. So it's wonderful being around people like that. You know, they every time I would go into a group, we did support groups. And every time I would go into the group, I would come out of the group elevated. Even my own kids said, geez, Dad, you know, that must be a really depressing place to work. And I said, quite the opposite.
Yeah. It's very uplifting to be real and authentic and to not have to have any pretense at all, except just to be.
To be. That's right.
Right. I always tell my patients, being. It's an action verb. Just be.
And so, you know, one of the things that blocks our happiness, and DeMello is very clear and strong about, is this things called attachments. And he defines an attachment as an emotional state of clinging, you know, clinging to what you want to get. It's caused by the belief that without something or some person or some result, you cannot be happy. Mm-hmm. And And at some point today, I invite your listeners to write at the top of a blank piece of paper this sentence. And the sentence is, I cannot be happy unless or until. And a lot of people start off with, I cannot be happy until I'm out of debt. Other people write, I cannot be happy until I don't have my neurosis anymore. I cannot be happy until my spouse agrees that I'm right and he or she's wrong. But when people begin to make that list, I'm just trying to prime the pump for them. But when you make that list, I cannot be happy unless or until, you'll find it's a long list. And
yes.
Then I invite them to look the list over and consider that these thoughts, these beliefs are blocking their natural state of happiness, and to spend some time seeing each thing you cling to for what it really is like the beginning of a nightmare that's going to cause you excitement and pleasure on the one hand, but also worry and insecurity and tension. And if you look carefully, you'll see that the one and only thing that causes unhappiness are these attachments. So it goes back to what DeMello's saying in this book, is that there's not a single moment in your life when you don't have everything you need to be happy. Don't underestimate happiness. It is a glorious state. I was reading F. Scott Fitzgerald the other day, and somebody asked him, what truth are you trying to get to in your books? And he goes, I'm not trying to get to truth. I just want a little happiness. It's what we all want, you know? And so when you realize that it is true that you have everything you need to be happy right here, right now, and the only time you're unhappy is because you're focusing on what you don't have, and that's correct. What that list is showing you.
That's and correct.
You make a shift from counting your blessings, a shift from lack to appreciation for what you have. You've made a shift. You're living in a whole other reality. You've entered a whole other world, a world that we all want to be in, just from that simple shift.
Yeah. You know, I think I'm going to just say, comment on a few things that you've actually mentioned. When you talk about, let's say, having a great, happy day and just a nice day, and then all of a sudden you're hit with like a force and a flush of all of a sudden an onset of this shame and feeling of worry or ruminations or whatever that was coming through. Lots of times it's getting triggered neurologically. Yeah, it's getting triggered inside, you know, our chemical receptors of our brain. And I think it's too late for this show, but maybe you and I can discuss after this show at another time if you would like to do a show with me, because I'm very interested in and I have a passion for the whole new science of how we are going into the vagus nerve and I don't know if you know a lot about that, and I am still a very I have the basic skills and language, and I understand it intuitively, but I don't have the actual language to communicate it correctly. So maybe we can have a discussion about that.
Sure.
And not to get too sidetracked, but the truth of the matter is the vagus nerve is in the body. And from what I understand, it's in our center, and it's a new way of looking about how we're getting triggered. It's a new way of looking about what is triggering and what is this anxiety, this depression, this shame, this feeling of discontent. That the neuroscience is saying that it's happening in the gut, and then everything is, and all the receptors are from the body, and then they send the messages up to the head. So it's not like the message is coming from the head. It's actually the head is just receiving it. And I'm sure I'm completely oversimplifying this.
My wife, she's a psychotherapist, and she's very interested in the vagus nerve. She's been doing a lot of reading and research on that. And you're right. They're beginning to see that it plays a big role in our lives.
But when you're saying, you know, everything comes back from when you were nine, this is what we call, and just to share a little bit of psychoeducational verbiage, we call this the intergenerational transmission of the trauma. whether it was a belittling stepfather, or whether it was the death of a mother at a very young age, the transmission of the trauma, that the wound that continued and continues to bleed until you get to this place where you acknowledge what's going on, and then you're able to say, okay, let me figure out, let me assess it, let me sit with it, let's not push it away, it will pass.
Yes.
But the, you know, that's why I think when we started the program and I said our well-intentioned caretakers, they do the best they can, but if they haven't resolved all of their issues and their baggage, their emotional baggage and traumas and grief and losses, they're going to, without, you know, unintentionally and not maliciously, but they're going to somehow just, you know, it will impact us. These thoughts and feelings will be introjected. And
right.
As children, if we're smart as we are, we soak everything up and we're good kids. So we learn to be sensitive to the negative.
Yes.
Rather than saying we have to filter it out because we don't need it.
There's gold there. There's real gold there. And, you know, all the important psychologists I know about, all of the great mystics I know about, and believe me, I've spent a lot of time either with them personally or in their books, they're unanimous about one thing, and that is that liberation from all the pain we're in, you know, whether it's intermittent or chronic, the liberation from it is through awareness.
And
DeMello loves to tell this story about a guy who goes, he's so fed up with his unhappiness and his miserable life. So he goes to find a holy man and he wants to ask him questions about how he can go move beyond his misery. And it turns out that the holy man that he was sent to see, it's his day of silence. So he asks the holy man, what do I need to do to liberate myself from this misery? And the holy man writes on a chalkboard, awareness. So the guy says, okay, awareness, that's, you know, I can buy that. What else? What else can I do to get beyond it? And the holy man writes underneath the first awareness, he writes, awareness. And he goes, well, I mean, what does that really mean? What does awareness really mean? And the holy man writes, awareness means awareness, awareness, awareness. In other words, it's the one thing you can do. It's so simple to do. It takes courage. It's not for the faint-hearted, that's for sure. But it's the one thing you can do to free yourself from some of the anguish that you're living with, or free yourself from the stress that you're living with. One of the things I did after I left the Center for Attitude and Healing was went out into the corporate world to teach people about stress. You know, when you talk about the neurology of stress, stress is fear. There's a thing called the amygdala, the fear center, and it only reacts when some form of fear is present. It turns out that 97% of the thing that's causing your fear center to react anxiously, angrily, or with depression, 97% of it is thoughts that you think. And so, in other words, it's not a real and present danger. It's your mind making up emergencies that your brain believes are real that set off these very pernicious stress reactions. And the more you set off these stress reactions, what happens to the brain is the brain becomes fear conditioned. And fear condition simply means is that you're constantly afraid when there's no reason to be. That's what fear condition is about. And that's a condition that all of us understand, you know? And that's the way in which you bust that, the way in which you get your higher intelligence to take control of your life is by bringing into awareness this pernicious pattern that's fear conditioning you. And that's what awareness does for you. And it's those simple four steps that DeMello lays out that will get you there. And this book will, you know, if you go on to Amazon and you read the comments that people are leaving on the book, it's doing really well. Yeah. And the comments that people are making are, such clarity. I feel the my confusion's been lifted, yeah. You know? I mean, who doesn't want that? Yeah. It made me go back and read it again.
Well, you know, Don, I have to thank you really tremendously so much for this great conversation. For me, it was just vibrance. I feel so energized to connect with somebody who's so like-minded. Yes.
Yes.
And yes. And I really appreciate the incredible good work that you are doing at the DeMello Center. And we haven't had the pleasure of meeting it personally, but when I get over to the Bay Area or next time you're in Manhattan, please, you know, give me a call. And absolutely, I would love to take you out for a Starbucks or something.
Sure. You know, that'd be fine. That'd be wonderful. Yes, thank you.
Okay, well, we're going to sign off. This is a new show for me. It's Mental Health 360. I'm still figuring out my format of how to, I want to address the biological and the social and the physiological and the personal, individual, the whole domain of functioning in this show. So it's a work in progress, and it's been really a great experience so far. Don, you were fantastic. Anyone who needs to reach out to Don Goey from the DeMello Center, can actually email Don at the DeMello Center. And anyone who would like to call in to our show, which is Mental Health 360, every other Thursday, which is at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. The number is 888-627-6008. And anyone who would like to leave me a question or comment, you can just send me an email, info@keepinglifereal.com. And the website is keepinglifereal.com. Thank you, Don. And thank you, Don, our producer. And everyone, good night. Thank you.